Every time I'm told what you speak about is too simple. The spiritual journey is far more complex. The one who comes to my rescue is Ramana Maharshi. I was just cleaning my bookshelf 2 days ago, and I found I had put this tag on 2 pages. When there's contact of a desirable sort of memory thereof, when there's freedom from undesirable contacts or the memory thereof, we say there's happiness. Such happiness is relative and is better called pleasure. But men want absolute and permanent happiness. This does not reside in objects, but in the absolute. It is peace, free from pain and pleasure. It is a neutral state. Perfect peace is of the self. That alone exists and is conscious. That perfect peace, which does not depend on pleasure or pain. This is what Bhagwan says we are all seeking. It is of the self, which means if we are peaceful, if it is a neutral state, we are abiding in the self. Is it possible to abide in the self while your daily living is that of a disturbed mind? Even a fledgling is protected by the parent birds only till such time it grows its wings. It is not protected forever. Similarly with devotees, I have shown the way. You must now be able to follow it up and find peace wherever you are. Find nothing else. Once the master's role is over, his hope is that the devotee finds peace wherever they are. Only peace. Nothing else. It's not rocket science. But this is possible only when we make peace a focal point in daily living. And once we get a taste of that peace, it is so seductive. You will find you don't want to justify your position to people anymore. You don't want to defend your opinions because that is taking away your own peace. Things like that start happening. Earlier, you would try to convince the other of your point of view as being the right point of view. Now that need drops away. So there is a direct impact how I deal with people and how I deal with events that transpire in my life. When I recalibrate my pointer to point at peace of mind, which Jesus summed up by saying, my kingdom is not of this world. I am in the world, but I am not of it. I am no longer trying to win wars and battles. I allow the hand of destiny to play its course, do what I think and feel I should do, knowing that what happens thereafter is God's will. Because as Joel Goldsmith says, now I know that besides the laws of man, the law of God operates, the higher power, which knows it all. One could say one has risen above the plane of duality. While being in it, one has given up identifications, being a victim or being an aggressor. Everything is a happening, playing out in the field of consciousness. You intend good and someone misunderstands that, takes away your peace. And the Gita says the outcome has never been in your control. That is our own life experience. As they say, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. The point is, I no longer blame and condemn people based on the outcome. So once again, I don't lose my peace. Disappointment, yes. Hurt, yes. But this too had to happen, else it would not have happened. You see, it is the understanding which gives the peace. You can't rationalize your way to peace of mind. Because peace of mind is the absence of the thinking mind. It does not mean to compromise where I feel I shouldn't. though it is a tempting thought, it does not mean to be walked over on. All it means is to relinquish my identification with my position and then participate in the game of life. Would anyone like to share something or ask something?
So,
just one sec. For the recording, we need the mic. Is this your first time?
Yes.
What is your name?
Pradeep.
Pradeep. From Bombay?
No, from Canada.
Canada.
Visit quite often.
Visit Bombay?
Yeah, my mother's here, come to visit.
Okay. Which part of Canada?
Vancouver.
Oh, that's the only state, city I've been to in Canada.
Yes, it's a lovely city.
Mm. It's like you're so far removed from the rest of the world, geographically at least.
Well, they call it Lotus Land because a lot of people see themselves as far removed from the world.
Lotus Land.
Because the rest of the people think they have to make a living. And the people who are in Vancouver somehow don't seem to have to make a living for themselves.
And they don't need to?
No, a lot of people come with money to Vancouver.
Oh, that's... So like a retired, stress-free life?
Basically an ashram from the rest of the world.
How nice.
Let's
all go. Huh?
Let's all go.
She wants you to take her with you. And all of us. She is speaking for all of us.
Yes, a communal visit is possible. But permanent residence is not that easy.
No, it is very beautiful. And it's so much, so overlaid by nature. And it's very, very picture postcard setting.
Yes, for a big city, it is very unusual.
Yes.
There are a few cities like that in the world. But it's a blessing to be there.
Nice.
So the question was that ultimately we are caught between passivity and non-passivity. You want to be engaged with the rest of the world, but peace is to be found by being actually disengaged in a very profound way. Disengaged in terms of the emotional interactivity or the vulnerability. And learning that takes a lot of time, but even if you get to that state, it is not that easy to stay in that state once you get a glimpse of that also, because of all of the intrusions imposed on your psyche, your mental state from worldly interactions. So at the end of the day, the issue really is, if you are inhabiting the world, in body we all inhabit the world. In mind we are attempting to disengage from the world in the sense of ego-driven interactions. And that balance is a lot easier to find if you're in a environment which is conducive to that. But in a non-conducive environment, what are the few hacks or tricks which one can use to sustain that equanimity, peace of mind, etc.?
Well, Pradeep, actually, prior to birth would make the entire lifespan look non-conducive. You see? All the ups and downs, trials and tribulations, pleasures and pains. That is why Maharaj, towards the end of his life, said, I'm even tired of going to sleep and waking up. The duality, the basic duality. But this lineage is the lineage of householder gurus. They were all engaged in the world. They were not staying in ashrams. So their experience was about interacting with the world, with the manifest world, and finding peace through those interactions. That peace does not depend on being in an ashram. And so they explained the core concepts of Advaita, basically being your relationship, three kinds of relationships. Your relationship with people, your relationship with what happens in your life, and your relationship with yourself. When these get looked at And the trick, the trump card, which is the card of non-doership, when that card is dealt, imbibed and absorbed, you find that you are engaging with the world in a far more intense way, doing what has to be done, fulfilling your dharma, knowing that God's will prevails. So it does not make to retreat from the world to find my peace. As the Buddha said, samsara is dukkha, nirvana is shanti, but they are not two. The world is a world of suffering, nirvana is peace, but peace is to be found through the world, through engagement. You see, if it was your blueprint to be a sannyasi or go and sit in a cave in the hills above Rishikesh, that would have happened. But you find that you are in the world, yet drawn to the spiritual journey, drawn to peace of mind. And therefore, you are placed exactly where you find you are placed, which does not mean it cannot be found in interactions. The sadhana is daily living. The sadhana is, for example, to realize that if someone upsets me, firstly, the feeling of upset is within me, not outside. That is the first step. That this person who has upset me has given me this opportunity to see what is within my own self. It's actually a very intense sadhana. Compared to this, it's much easier to be in a cave. And then the nature of life and living and relationships gets revealed. By and by day, when I see that someone in my life who is troubling me is playing out their own script the way God has designed them in terms of their genetics and their conditioning, and they are just on autopilot, I start taking things less personally. Then I deal with the situation at hand. I'm no longer trying to character assassinate or badmouth to other people about this person. Those games are given up. And so by and by, I start finding this peace. This ashram is within, and what only hides its view is the dialogue of the thinking mind, which is either in the dead past or an imaginary future, the ideal future scenario, or is full of the garbage of hatred, malice, jealousy, envy, pride, arrogance, guilt, shame, and so on and so forth. When I find my thinking mind is annihilated, I am in my ashram. And then I find my working mind, when I'm engaged in work and it is not disturbed by the thinking mind, the output is phenomenal. I'm fully engaged in the task at hand. Absolutely, totally, because I have understood this game of life, that whoever I meet, whoever takes away my peace, ultimately is role-playing. The one behind all the characters is God. The other person may not have this understanding, but I have it. So I have to decide and know for myself, where is my peace to be found? It no longer depends on the other now. Earlier, it depended on the other. If this person says the right thing, I'll be at peace. It's not going to happen. So this is how an exploration of daily living, my interactions, my thoughts about people and situations, when this is all contemplated on, reflected on, this peace starts getting revealed. So I say it, and I don't say it lightly. The people in your life who trouble you, because we all have such people, it could be a family member, it could be a friend, it could be a politician, anyone. They are your greatest teachers. Because it's not that your battle is against them, though it plays out that way. It is they have given you the opportunity to see the truth behind what is going on, to understand the nature of this leela, and then enjoy playing the game.
So the last part, the enjoy playing the game, is a little difficult to get to, at least in my case. In some ways, I guess I tend to take it a little bit more seriously, and therefore I'm not willing to let go, essentially, I guess, of the ego interacting with what is going on and requiring a response which is preconceived.
Which is what it would like to hear.
Yes, yes.
So when that is relinquished, that God did not guarantee you, you will hear what you want to hear and what you would like to hear, then you start enjoying. Enjoying not in the sense of deriving a pleasure from it. Enjoying in the sense that it becomes less of a burden.
So luckily I'm at a stage now where I don't see my life as a burden, and I don't see fluctuations in life and living as necessarily an act of vengeance or retribution or somebody basically out to get you, something like that. It's a situation of understanding that life has its good and bad turns, and if you think that you deserve the good turns, it is a corollary that you probably deserve the bad ones as well.
So, based on our blueprint.
Yes, so
that's a good space to be.
Yeah, I'm very comfortable.
You know, I mentioned recently a Calvin and Hobbes cartoon strip where Hobbes asks Calvin, do you believe there is a God? And he thinks about it and then replies, well, somebody is out to get me. That's the way many of us view life, especially those who face lots of challenges.
Yeah, because we never deserve the...
Yeah, what did I do to deserve this kind of pain in my life? The point is, we will never have the answer to that. The minute we find ourselves asking this question, why has God given me more pain than pleasure? We have set ourselves up for a disturbed mind. That answer we will not know. As my teacher would say, the human intellect is so puny, so finite. How can it know the will of God? It is not possible. The only way out is to take it day by day, pain by pain.
So one other thought. When you try and be honest and say things in the reality you live in, now everybody's reality tends to be different, the reality they're living. And the pushback that happens is, you're saying this, but it's not true as per my reality. So the person who's interacting with you is interacting from a viewpoint which is distinct from yours. And therefore, misunderstanding is inherent status quo. And then how do you try and bridge that misunderstanding? Because I actually think at this stage in my life that most of what we call an irritation, or somebody trying to get you, or somebody trying to be nasty with you, is because their lived reality is different from yours, and they are living probably as honestly as you think you're living your life. And the only thing is, they are living it with different parameters than yours. So without you losing your peace of mind or your equanimity, how do you engage in with somebody where that is a basic cause of friction, let's say?
So it's very simple. You give up all desire to build that bridge. When you know everyone is operating through their conditioning and their nature which God made, you know events will play out the way they are meant to. You will give up the need to try and convince the other, because you have now realized you are operating from your own filters.
Yes.
So too is the other. So the outcome is not in either one's control, because their view is so limited. One person is blabbing, the other person is blabbing. And the result is something else. Sometimes in your favor, sometimes in the other's favor. So, when this realization happens that I may not be able to convince the other, No matter the words I use, how clear I am, because they are still going to see it from their filters. My thinking mind is annihilated, which is what I started by saying. The need to convince the other drops, the need to build the bridge does not exist now, because I have the full understanding that everyone is shaped by the same God and God's will prevails. I no longer truly feel the need to convince anyone. Yet, it doesn't mean I don't express myself.
Yes.
If my nature is to express myself and say what I feel is right, I must do that. That is honoring my nature. But I don't go about browbeating the other or myself for a desired outcome. Of course, I would wish a desired outcome. Who wouldn't? We are in the manifest world. But then a smile comes to my face, like it's coming to yours now, that if it's meant to happen, it'll happen. If not, it won't. That pressure of trying to force outcomes drops away. That is the big change. Life truly becomes far simpler, far more effortless. I start walking more lightly because the mantra now is, this too shall pass. I now know not only all events in my life are transient, I lose loved ones, business goes up and down, whatever it may be. I know that my own life is transient. Everything is changing. Everything is passing by. What value of my thoughts, feelings, and opinions in the larger scheme of things? So I do start taking things lightly and therefore experiencing more peace in daily living. I find that I no longer react unconsciously like I used to, because now the understanding has happened. I find I am more and more responding to a situation. I find I am able to witness life more and more. Earlier I was mired in it, sucked into it. I was in this action-reaction loop, defending myself, my positions, attacking the other. When I realize there truly is no other, I find when someone upsets me, for example, even that is witnessed, rather than a knee-jerk reaction to get back at the other or to defend myself, that I have done no wrong. Witnessing is happening. Earlier, observing as an individual and judging based on my filters. Now, it's a kind of pullback, and I start witnessing more and more the people in my life, what they say, what they do, how they behave, and myself. So many traits which I have, which I didn't look at. For example, if I was miserly or conjoose, and now I ask myself, what made me this way? No money in the childhood years, parents being stingy. And I realize even this was not my doing. It was the prism through which I got this conditioning. So I will be very careful tomorrow when I label someone else a miser, because now I have introspected, looked within, that if I am calling out a quality in someone else, perhaps I also possess it. Maybe in a different degree. You see, this journey becomes so revealing because it burns the ego to ash. The death of the sense of doership. The death of me and my story.
Yeah, I think once you look beyond your story and stop taking ownership in the egotistic way, then life becomes a lot
simpler.
Yes.
Simpler and simpler and simpler.
I think both of them are playing their script, so-called their life script. And when you jump into their script, then the conflicts start. But if you just witness and say, this too shall pass, without jumping in that person's script, then maybe that moment is gone.
I think the problem is we have to
Yes.
reactivity to triggers.
Yes.
Once you start understanding that, otherwise you respond without thought.
Yes. If you are aware of it and you give yourself a couple of minutes before you become very defensive,
then you are enlightened.
When
that, you see, when that wedge is placed between a happening and your reaction to it, you are at peace. Truly. If one is experiencing that, one is in a very good space. That is really what you said. It is exactly that. But that cannot be forced. I cannot force myself to not react. That is doership. It's the ego coming through the back door. Therefore, the understanding starts revealing these things. Can you imagine if someone who's always bugged you is standing in front of you and now you just allow them to be and you just marvel at how this person is operating based on their blueprint and you feel inside this has nothing to do with me, though it appears that way. You may just start laughing because you have now not taken it personally. You see, I know this may sound abstract. Supposing I erased your body, but you're still there, and someone abuses you, you will not take delivery of that abuse because you don't exist as a body. But because we are identified so strongly with this name and form, this is me, this is my name, this is my form, how dare you attack me? Because consciousness got identified with this, it takes things personally. The joke is, in deep sleep it disappears. Isn't it a joke? If someone abuses you when you're in deep sleep, what will you do? So who receives the abuse? The body does not receive it. The identification with the body, which is the ego, receives the abuse and takes it personally. This is the Maya. It is not our doing. This is the way the whole construct is. And truly, compassion starts arising. Because supposing you get hurt by someone and what they said, now the focus shifts. You become more mindful of what you will say to people because you don't want them to feel the hurt you are feeling. That starts happening. It's amazing. And this is why we are here. Now, Ramana Maharshi said you are here to realize the self. This is realizing the self.
And I think you yourself start feeling you are not the same person because of the texture of your mind, the way you think, it changes, it evolves with understanding, with the practice, and then you see this is not I was earlier.
You see, because the fresh conditioning is, you could say, re-inscribing new grooves into your brain. Your whole, any event which happens, you now see it in a different light. Automatically it starts happening. That is the intervention of grace. Grace has stepped in, brought a teaching to someone which says, hey, just take some time off, look at your own life, how you're reacting to it, the people in your life, and see it from this new perspective. And by and by, you find this change is happening. Now you can't go back to the old you. No matter how much you try, now you can't go back to the old you. This is the spiritual journey.
What state you are.
Yeah.
So you don't want to disturb that.
Exactly.
By going back to.
Can you imagine telling yourself, I preferred when I was troubled?
That's what happens.
Can't hear you. You have such a soft, gentle voice. Maybe you should do a yoga nidra session for us or something.
That's what you always say.
Yeah.
So this is something interesting. Like yesterday, me and her, we were walking together, and this is what we said. I said, like, you know, this is the beautiful gift that God has given to us, that we always want to move forward. Like she was telling what I have come to, maybe. I said, yeah, you'll always go forward because now it's no going back. Because we always want to look forward and want to be a better place than we are today.
And what is that better place?
Peace of mind. And every moment.
Which means you're going forward to go back to where you came from. Maharaj called it reversing into the future.
How you said, like, this peace is so seductive. Like once if you have tasted, there's no way that you want to step out.
It will bother other people.
Yes, I do. Yes.
People who are troubled don't like people who are at peace.
Also bothers them, but it attracts them.
True. Well said.
It bothers them, but it attracts them. Please, I've noticed it.
Well said. Well said.
They find your company more interesting now than it was probably for me 2 years ago. 2 years ago, I know people are somewhat trying to avoid me. But now the same people like being around my company will invite me for unnecessary events. It just happens.
So true. I just wanted to know, you use the words, what is meant to happen will happen. These same words have been going on in my mind. I don't know why. I really don't know why. The same words you said. You know, what is meant to happen will happen. Why it keeps coming back to me, even before you said it. I find it very strange.
But do you agree with it?
I agree with it fully.
So it is your mantra. Why is it strange? It is like your inner voice telling you what is meant to happen will happen. It's quite beautiful.
And on this doership which you have been telling us about, nowadays I keep telling myself, I'm not doing this. It's somebody else who is doing it.
Fair enough. But the result of that is also important. Are you at peace?
I am much more at peace.
Yes.
Much.
Yes. You see, you've taken me back to when I was 15 years old, when I lost my father. And there was a lot of fear. And I would tell myself this, what is meant to happen will happen. What is not meant to happen won't happen. So whenever there was some fear, like I would get very fearful if I read a news item of someone being murdered or something negative, the fear would come up. The fear of loss, the fear of these kind of things. And the mind, when I was 15, would start telling itself, what is meant to happen will happen. What is not meant to. I didn't read this anywhere because the mind was troubled. So the mind was trying to rationalize for itself. And in that cartwheel, it was taking away my peace because now the mind kept anything, what is meant to happen. What? So that understanding was there at the level of the mind. But by and by, it started going to the heart. But it's a beautiful mantra because it is a realization which is basically saying what will happen is not what I want to happen. What will happen is what is meant to happen. That is why Ramana Maharshi said the same words. I don't know the exact words, but he said the ordainer controls the fate of all souls. What is meant to happen will happen. What is not meant to happen won't try as much as you. Therefore, the best course is to keep silent.
And there's another thing I wanted to clear about. I heard somewhere the soul has no gender, neither male nor female. So if that is the case, then we should not be affected by all these happenings which are happening now. You know, the rapes and the molestations and all that.
No, these are different things. The soul has no gender is true in what sense? I am prior to this body. There's consciousness operating through this body, which makes me operate. One body is designed as male, one body is designed as female. So it is quite right that pure being, pure presence, pure consciousness does not have gender. In the Christian tradition, archangels are genderless. They don't have gender. Shiva as Ardhanarishvara, no gender. But rapes and all are a different thing. It doesn't mean one should not be bothered by it. Of course one should. Because these are extreme forms of violence and harm. It is human nature to be bothered by such events. But the wise one realizes a happening happened because it was meant to. Now the law will take its course. And the desired outcome may or may not happen. So the wise one understands this is the nature of life. So many crimes go unpunished. Some get caught. Some are released for lack of evidence. Others are convicted. So the wise one does not lose his or her peace over this event. But it does not mean hurt and pain will not arise at the news. That is what happens.
As you said, the outcome may not be the desirable. That goes precisely like how your teacher said, like our minds are so finite. We don't know why the infinite will is operating in that way.
Exactly. I will never know. A painting can never know why its painter painted it. That's what he would say. And we are all paintings. We are creations of God trying to know the will of the Creator. We will never know. That need to know is given up. My own life has proved to me that so many things don't make sense. So I stop making sense of life. Life is nonsense. It does not make sense. It is nonsense. The mind stops making sense of relationships, of happenings. That's because it's too restricted in that dynamic. And I find with that happening, I'm resting more and more in pure being. I truly, and that is when people start coming to me. That is what happens. Because they feel comfortable. They feel that they are not being judged here. They feel they are not being condemned here. Earlier, I may have judged and condemned them, but the realization has happened inside. Now something else starts happening. It's quite beautiful.
In fact, I'd like to make one point in addition to what I told you.
Till about 18 months ago, I was huge ego and I was known as a control freak, whether at work, in my house. Now, 18 months down the line, I'm just a flashback into 18 months in the past. How do I put it? That mind is dead. It's annihilated. It's gone. I assess myself 18 months ago. I look at myself today and I'm not surprised at the change because I feel understanding is right in the center of the heart. And I just look back and say, it's very good it happened because it had to happen. Happening or coming to Gautam Sachdeva was a happening. It wasn't pre-planned or that wasn't my control working on anything. I just landed up. You know, I just landed up through your ads, social media. But now looking at it, I'm not disturbed by the fact that I was a control freak, huge ego. Everything had to be as per my will. If I didn't get the desired result, I was upset at others. Now looking at that, I say that was happening then. And now, 18 months of this place, at your place, this is a happening now. Because the understanding makes me feel that way.
Because even then you were not the doer of your act.
Even now I'm not the doer. Even now, then I realize now, that time that control freak, ego, disappointment and not getting desired result. Now, desired result is not even a desire now. It's not a desire. It's just getting up in the morning, functioning, sleeping early, getting up in the morning and whatever's to happen is happening and it's okay, fine, it's happening. It's just accepted, good or bad. Either way, it's happened.
A preferred result may be there, but not a desired result.
Not a desire. A preferred result. You see, the working mind works to a preferred result. A working mind works to a preferred result, but it's no guarantees. That acceptance comes in, and now there is complete peace.
This is traditionally in yoga called the rebirth.
Rebirth. It's a rebirth. Completely a rebirth, only this took 18 months, that's all. Otherwise, the birth is 9 months.
It can take lifetimes.
I know, I'm surprised this happened quite...
It happened in spite of who you are.
In spite of what a dash I was. Control free, ego, everything I say has to happen.
See how benevolent God is. You feel unqualified. You feel unqualified to have been granted the peace, you know, and then humility arises.
Yes, humility and a lot of gratitude that I feel saved. I feel saved from my life that you mentioned once. Today morning, I promised to get out of my own way.
Yeah.
I'm in that space of peace.
I'm safe from myself.
We all. Yeah. I think that you're... But she's been wanting to ask. Let me bring the mic back. We all are being saved from ourselves only.
Yeah.
That is really it.
It's not even a feeling. It just...
Yeah.
It's there. You're in that space. It's different.
So it's like a follow-up to, you know, what you answered her, that there could be hurt and pain, but it doesn't bother you anymore. So as the understanding deepens, will that pain also not go away?
Pain is pain in the moment. Pain is pain in the moment, and what is meant to pain you will pain you. It is not about not even feeling that pain. See, supposing God has designed you in a certain way that you're very sensitive as a person. You will be more prone to getting hurt than someone not designed to be as sensitive. It does not mean that will go away. So that pain will be experienced as pain in the moment. But because the full understanding is there, nobody is doing anything. There is no involvement in that pain. In the duration of time, there will be no story. But if it is destined to pain you, if someone who you know is not as sensitive as you, nothing may happen if someone tells them the same thing. But you are designed a certain way. So it does not mean the end of pain. It means the end of the story around the pain. Because the story around the pain is the problem. That is where I'm identified. If I keep telling myself that these people are hurting me, these people are causing me pain, that is my story. Ultimately, it boils down here. But if I'm sensitive, pain will arise. Now, if I'm in a situation where I'm receiving constant pain from someone, I have to decide, do I want to subject myself to that constant pain or do I have an option to move away from that pain? But there's no involvement. Oh, this person again said this to me. They again did this to me. I went back. Again, this happened. That is my story. I am invested still in my story if that dialogue is in my mind. But when I see it objectively, when this is not happening more and more, then I'm divested of the story. Then I do what I feel is right, especially for my peace of mind. If I have to exercise options and I have one, which is stay away from this person, wish them well, I'll exercise that option. Why would I subject myself to pain all the time? But the point which gets missed is that story is still going on in my mind about the pain. Because that is my indulgence. That is my ego with its identifications. That is really an indulgence. That is in fact fortifying the me, poor me. And the wisdom teachings will burn this to ash. This poor me syndrome will be burnt to ash. Yes, Hamza. Sorry, would you like to ask something else? Yeah. Ramana Maharshi's very famous quotation, "There are no others." When he was asked, how do we treat others? And this whole teaching is that only. If everyone is an instrument of God, it means there are no others. But yet we have to deal with others at the manifest level. Now we deal with this understanding. So there are others. There are those whom I will like, those I won't. But when I see the hand of God above everyone, then there are no others. It does not mean I won't have my preferences. Does that answer your question or you wanted to ask? There are persons at the level of personality, but because I have understood the concept of non-doership, there is no person to blame and hate and judge and condemn, including myself. What is your name? You've come here a few times. Yes, Hamza.
There's an ancient tradition in the philosophy about sannyas. When somebody takes sannyas, he is put on a fire and there's a ceremonial death, like a burning, and the person's head is shaved and the person takes a new life, a new name, and the past is burnt out, like rebirthing, which is exactly what we're talking about. You know, in the what you read in Ramana Maharshi's book, what happens when a child is born, this is in psychology now, it's one of the theories that a child actually should stay in the mother's womb for 21 months. But he comes out prematurely 9 months. So he comes out dependent. So he becomes the center of everyone's attention and he thinks he's the center. He's the center of the universe. So the false center, the ego which is created, makes everything different. So what happens, every action which is done is interpreted by the mind, which is a yantra. And it's what happens, a person gets very sensitive about, so when he's dependent on other people's praise, other people's rebuke, but actually the whole idea is to find the true center, not the false center which is created by the ego and the mind, which always wants to keep you hooked onto these external manifestations of acceptance. But we have truly have not accepted ourselves.
Yes.
So if we truly know ourselves, that's the whole tree which you write, because the teaching of accepting thyself, you accept yourself as you are and you communicate yourself. But our energy goes outside, trying to get other people's approval.
Yes.
And that gives us mind. Somebody criticizes us, then we go into a state of despondency. So it's all about regaining our center, regaining our true self, and looking at this as a dealer. So burning that past, rebirthing, as you call it. So now in psychology, there's a new the new modem which is created. It's called ACT, ACT, which is Acceptance Commitment Theory, which is based basically on Raman Maharishi's, but the author doesn't give the credit to Raman Maharishi. But he says, acceptance of everything around you, commitment to what's your goal in life. So this is a word called refusing. So we fuse with people who are like us, who give us the praise, who give us the adulation, and we refuse. So this is refusing from situations, refusing from people's opinions.
Mm.
It's a theory which is now catching. So it all comes from the ancient scriptures.
Really? Yes.
That is why so many times when therapists write to me or I meet them, they say it's so close, it's like two parallel streams, you know. It is really close.
Because now we realize that even the mind actually is only a yantra, it's only a tool to communicate from the soul to the body. So the soul can't communicate to the body, so it's the mind which is used. But now the mind has become supreme, and the mind, because it has no identity of its own, wants to find the identity by always taking to the past. So P.C. Shelley, he's one of my favorite authors. He has a beautiful poem. I'm just quoting a few lines. We look before and after and pine for what is not. Our sincere is laughter with some pain is fraught. It's always the mind is taking you between the past and the future, but never.
Yeah, and the problem is as we age, we don't realize there's less and less of future. Your first time?
No, second.
Your name?
Mitul.
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 Yeah. Mitul.
So, my question is on the line of whatever is supposed to happen will happen. Right? On that line, do we now practice affirmations or not? That is the first part. Second part, then what is the role of the free will? As I understand, free will is again a part of a God's will, right? And in daily life, to go smoother, right, we are bound to practice free will. But till what context or till what limit do we practice free will and we stop and we give up? So that is the question.
See, regarding affirmations, if you are drawn to affirmations, if you enjoy reciting affirmation, by all means you should. You see, because one thing is we are so life negative. Our thinking is so toxic. What do affirmations do? They balance it out. So you go from one extreme to the other. The Mahavakyas of the scriptures were affirmations. I am that. Is an affirmation, no? Means I am not this, I am that. So the issue is with affirmations in today's context are being used for manifesting material objects. That now is a different story which I don't want to get into. But affirmations as a science is a very powerful science. It is a beautiful science. So that is one thing. Now free will has to be there as the mechanism of daily living. Because I have to decide, do I take this assignment or not? Do I see this movie or do I see that movie? I have to exercise my free will as a mechanism of daily living. But when I know deep down that my free will is based on my genetics and conditioning, which God made, it means it's truly not my free will. My free will is based on my filters. So my reliance on that free will, my dependence on that starts dissolving. I yet have to exercise it, but that load is gone. I won't blame myself and hate myself for exercising my free will. There will be no guilt and shame if the outcome is different. And vice versa. If the outcome is in my favor, there will be no pride and arrogance. Because I know it is God's will. Pleasure, yes. but no pride and arrogance, because it is the end of doership. So free will stays as free will. It has to be exercised, because that is the mechanism in this dualistic life. But the importance and the role I gave it in my life is now in the background, because I have understood that there is no difference between free will and God's will. It's quite simple, actually. So, for example, I enter a shop and I see a dress or I see a shirt and I like two, and I know I have the budget for one. I have to exercise my free will to pick that one, which will be based on my likes. Whether I want the light blue one or I want the white one, I have to exercise my free will because I have to buy one. But I know that I have been given a preference for white, so I bought the white. That's how it operates.
I'll just speak a little longer.
Yeah. No, it's for the recording. You know, because these go up on YouTube, so then they complain that we can't hear the very intelligent audience which comes to your talks.
At least I must say thank you. You looked at me and said that.
So, the question I had was with my free will. So, if you have a free will, it should be intrinsically and inherently free. And when you impose the my part to it, you're basically, in a way, imposing yourself
yes.
to the will.
Yes.
And I see that as kind of contradictory, because it's your will, but you have now subjugated it to yourself, and it's no longer free as far as I see it. That's the way I look at it.
It is free now because the sense of doership has been removed from it.
Once it is removed.
Once it is removed.
But we are all still swimming in samsara.
Yeah, but now we realize that my will, what I thought it was, is not truly my will. Now I realize that. That itself is a very big step.
So when we talk of free will, basically we are seeking to free ourselves
yes.
from samsaric hooks.
Yes.
And at the end of the day, once you eliminate all of those hooks, then in a way, the way I look at it, you are truly free.
Yes, but not once you eliminate it, once it eliminates
yes.
it.
Yes, once it so happens that
yes.
you are in sync, in harmony
yes.
with the act of freeing
yes.
yourself. In
yes,
effect.
Beautiful.
So the realization is that this is what we are all seeking. And then, of course, how do we engage? Because even the words we use, they tend to create biases, which we are not really fully aware of. Even in the way we think, we are creating essentially a filter or a superimposition, which is totally not an act of conscious. It's not a conscious act. It's an act where we are at this stage of our progression through life. And basically, ultimately, the question is, you're trying to deal with the duality of living and eliminate it. And the process of elimination, as long as you see it as a distant goal, we can all say we are swimming in samsara. So, you know, the filters are there and we acknowledge the filters. But the process of removing the filters is really at the core of what we are trying to do.
Filters cannot be removed.
So,
the core at what you are trying to do is try to please everyone. It's not going to happen. You see, we are not going to be the ideal man. It's not going to happen. We now realize that all imperfections are perfectly placed in others as well as in myself. That is what happens. So this pressure and the stress is now not operating anymore.
So basically, once the recognition that you are operating under these filters
yes.
is the starting point to the journey, let's say.
Big starting point.
Yes.
And so are others.
Right. So the progression in this journey is really at the core of what I'm trying to do at this point. And luckily, I mean, I'm at a stage where I don't have to deal with a lot of samsara because of retirement, basically. And I know a lot of people still have black hair and
yeah.
all of the samsaric issues of dealing with, you know, enough money so you can actually say, okay, I'm free of that pressure and those issues. And then the question is, how do we actually walk that path in a way where you're minimizing the wastage of the precious resource, which is time?
When the goal is peace of mind. And that is why Maharaj said the road is the goal. And you find that things change in the sense that you are no longer obsessed with harming someone who has upset you. Things like that start happening. It is not about overriding one's filters. It is not about being a better person. It's too much doership. It is about an acceptance, a release, a letting go, and a seeing. That is why my teacher would say the seeing is the only doing necessary.
So basically you're saying awareness of,
yes.
of the duality.
You could say that.
That. You're immersed in it.
Yes.
Is actually a pathway to to going beyond.
Yes.
A life of
sure.
living.
Sure. Yes, Anu?
Yeah, my question was alluding to incident that Madam had pointed out. How do I see will of God even in that?
Whose else's will is it? Is there any other will operating besides the will of God? My teacher would be asked this. Could Hitler be the will of God? He said just as much as Mother Teresa. That is the duality of life and living. You see, because if that is not the will of God, that means there is another power more powerful than God whose will it is. And non-duality, Advaita, is not two. All there is God, the source, consciousness, within which duality of every conceivable kind arises. So you will have a Vancouver and you will have a Gaza. So God is not as an individual who is only wanting good things to happen. God is the totality. It is human beings with their free will which reinterpret this, which is also part of the Maya.
So how do I accept this? Or how do I deeply accept it?
You have it, the acceptance is in knowing it is the will of God, no matter how painful it is. This question has been asked thousands of years ago, even when the Crusades were there. That kind of hate and violence, whose will was it? But because of the separation, the distortion, the me versus the other, the way the human beings got embroiled in this Maya, this is all that started coming up. Is today any different from then?
What I feel deep down, we believe that God only does good. It's a deep belief within, because God has been always looked as a superhero.
It is, you are also true, right, in what you are saying. All that God made was good, and without Him was not made anything that was made. But this is a talk for another day, because we as human beings think God only does good things. If that is so, my teacher would ask you, who created handicapped children? What answer do you have now? You see?
So we have no answer that past karma.
That's the third talk.
I totally resonate with this, because I realize it's in a very short time, it's all inclusive.
Yes, it is all inclusive.
It's all inclusive. But yes. You know, there are many people still whom I meet, for them it's very hard to believe, how can this happen?
Correct.
But then,
so you are concerned with your journey.
Yes.
This is my closest friend, Harsh. First time he's come to the satsang. He lives in London now. Actually, I would like him to share his... He met Ramesh ji, I think once or twice?
Many
times, yeah. And can you just share with them what you took away from your meeting him and understanding?
So, I actually met him at very troubled times in my life. One was that my wife and me were not being able to conceive a child. And to me, that was the most precious thing that I wanted in my life. And the second thing was that I was being troubled by my building society, since with some very great animosity directed towards my father and my grandfather, but somehow I was the recipient of it. So when I went with Gautam the first time, I met two people there who were, you know, bowing before Ganesh. One was the doctor who went to deliver my first child, a doctor called Indira Hinduja, who was the mother of the IVF baby. And the second was this lawyer who was troubling me in the society litigation. needless to say, I knew this was all meant to happen because I had a baby. He's now an 18-year-old boy, and the whole core of my existence. And that lawyer gave up the fight against me of her own demand. So that was my first experience when I went to Ramesh, and then he used to have these things called the hot seats, where you sat in the middle and you questioned all your... And my first belief was pretty similar to what was discussed today, that why is it that I am placed where I am? Why is it that a child must be born handicapped? Why is it that I must be a victim of rape? I don't understand. I question this random allotment of life, or as a universe. And I would see everybody had more or less the same question with different circumstances, and everybody would come to the same answer. The day I stopped going to Ramesh was I got my answer. And his answer was to me, and I think this is recorded in one of those DVDs, that he had. He said that, look, your brain has a million cells. And he said, only when each cell does its job, does your brain function as a whole. And you do what you do. But he's saying that each cell does not know what the other cell is doing. That cell is just doing what it's supposed to do, irrespective of the outcome, whether the whole brain works or not, whether the other cell does its job, third cell does its job. And the one cell will never understand how all of them operate jointly. In the same way, you are just a particle of consciousness. It is beyond you to understand how consciousness works. Do not try. It is your ego trying to understand all this, and you can waste all your whole life only finding that. And that day all the questioning stopped. And that was
beautiful.
That day I have not had any questions.
But
beautiful.
Beautifully answered.
So
yeah.
I think he can start some talk in London.
I'm very happy to.
Let somebody else do the job.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
You know what, beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. But what are the odds of the doctor and the lawyer there?
Yeah.